good afternoon, good evening, and good morning, Power Hour Nation. It is 8/3/2018. It's the day the prodigal host has returned, so to speak. It's so good to be with you. So good to be here. In case you forgot, I'm Daniel Brigman, and you are listening to the Power Hour radio show. ThePowerHour.com is our website. It's been a while. Is this this black thing in front of me? Is this what I'm supposed to talk into? Yeah. Okay. All right. We're adjusting. Great broadcast today. Fantastic interview. Very important interview. It was three weeks ago, I think. Ryan Bundy for governor in Nevada. He came on and talked about his experiences and his campaign to be governor in Nevada. Today, we have his father on. His father, Clive M. Bundy, the epicenter of so much patriotic that has happened in America, a flashpoint. I mean, I hark back in the history to, I'll talk about it before he's on, but Bunkerville in 1775, even the Boston Massacre in 1770. This is a key point and key things that happened into this and parallels that we can draw. We want to learn about as much as we can. We want to learn about his experience, what he's been up to, what it was like in jail, all these things we're going to ask him, and so much more. We're going to go to get to some news, and then Cliven's going to join us in about a little less than 30 minutes. So be sure that you are here to hear that. And there's an idea, a concept, and this is being challenged by the day, by science. And we've talked about it quite a bit. When you hear a new idea, you have to say it over and over again. Even when Columbus and his crew landed in parts of America, the islands, what have you, there are records indicating that the shaman of the area could see the ships, but that the other people, many of them, they could not even see the ship. I mean, this is crazy. They couldn't even see the Europeans that had landed and the ships that had landed because their consciousness was on such a different wavelength. They couldn't even see them. We're under I certainly have been all my life, most of my life anyway, under this assumption that the universe exists outside me, that if I were to die, you know, my house would still be here. My dog would still be here. Certainly would. If everybody were to die, well, the plants would still be there. You know, Greenpeace, what have you, global warming, nature, good for man, good for the planet, whatever. That if all of mankind ceased to exist, died off, whatever, that this planet would still be here and nature would still live and the animals would still live. On some level, maybe there's some truth to that. On a full level, the full extent of it, when you take it to the nth degree on quantum science, we are learning that that is not true. We are learning that that is not true. That nothing that you see around you exists outside of the imagination of mankind. Think about what I just said. Why did I say it? Science, every day, the leading scientists, I mean, we're talking, you know, the Dr. Lanza, Joe Dispenza, what's his name? Greg Braden, Dr. Bruce Lipton, and many other experiments that are going on are making the Bible look more and more clear every day. They're also making Darwin look like a complete idiot, look like a fool, and a reprobate, really, a scientific reprobate, which is more likely what he is. The basic tenet of cross species and evolution that we know, that of evolution from monkeys and all this type of thing, has almost zero factual support, scientific factual support, although it's been taught in for decades in our schools as being fact. What has it created? You think that schools do not teach a religion. The religion of schools in America, public schools, is secular humanism, a separation of anything greater than what we can see, anything greater than humans. I was just on a trip, a business trip. I was in, we'll talk a lot about it probably next week or whatever, but one of the t-shirts in the shop, what I've been telling you over and over again, it said, all monsters are human. You remember what I keep telling you, what they're trying to turn you into. When I say they, the wannabe controllers. The Illuminati, that's a general idea. The Luciferians, that's probably a more accurate idea. The Luciferian doctrine that you must sacrifice yourself, the left-hand path. There's a left-hand path of enlightenment. There's a right-hand path. The Savior in the Bible represents the right-hand path, freedom, liberty. Luciferianism represents the left-hand path. It will certainly give you power. It certainly, we've seen that in government, entertainment. It will give you money. You can buy anything in this world with money. But at the end of that left-hand path is still a dictator. And that's Lucifer, the will, the vanity of man, the vanity of the fallen man that Lucifer appeals to is growing in our world. At the heart of this battle is each one of us. The Bible lays out a plan, and I'm not trying to get biblical for biblical's sake. I'm trying to give you historical perspective for nationality, for national sake, for your freedom. The story of the Bible is your story, the sacrifice of divinity. Where is divinity sacrificed? Of course, Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. Golgotha, what does Golgotha mean? The skull. The deeper, much deeper meaning that we're seeing, that science is starting to prove, is that the divinity has been sacrificed on you. The cross that you have to bear is that there's a part of the divine nature, speech, imagination, creation, that nothing in this world exists outside your consciousness and your ability to create, and that the power is given to you, dominion is given to you, all these things that the Bible declares, science is now proving. I mean, it's a little esoteric, and it's, you know, it's a little bit of a, not, you know, exactly a fit, but you could see there's nothing else that explains it so closely as the Bible does. An allegorical spiritual meaning. At the heart of the contest in the EU, it's national sovereignty. It's to trick the sovereignty of the individual. Europeans have a much different attitude about their role, about government's role. And you can see the imprints, even these hundreds of years later, how America came to be. And that the people who left Europe came to America with a burning desire. And desire is the center of all creation. That's why, well, okay, let me go a little deeper. Why do you think gender is being challenged so much? Gender represents man and woman, male and female. They represent creation. We come from a world of singularity, a world of love, a world of perfection, a world of order. And we come to a world of duality. A man and female, yin and yang, represent the two parts of this duality. Two parts that must be unified before creation to continue. So the act of procreation of these two parts of creation, male and female, coming together, the duality, the incompleteness of each of them in our lives, we're incomplete. The Bible, you know, tells us we're incomplete without the other to some degree. In some degree, that's true. Obviously, when they come together and join, and then the energy that is released out of nowhere, seemingly out of nowhere, then creation happens. It's symbolic of the deeper meaning, the deeper power, which is in each one of us. And so when we misuse this creative power, when this creative power is not tied to some restraint, to some morality, to some sense of love, and to some sense of commitment, and then it's just giving a teenager a machine gun and telling them to go out in the city and start shooting it off. So what happens? Disorder. So Lucifer tries to use that power, our creative power, because he doesn't have that same power. Tries to use that power, take that power, de-evolve it, say we're just animals. We're just like, you know, the cows and dogs and whatever that you see all around, to use that energy then and to break up family. Family is the unit of the universe. It's very big what I just said. Family is the unit of the universe. Male, female, children. And so it continues and then it goes. Male, female, children, and creation is never ending, and the power that goes on for eternity and can go on for eternity, just like seed, GMO seeds compared to non-GMO seeds, they can go on forever. The power of creation that is within us was encapsulated within this universe. The last part of creation in the Bible, the last thing created, I guess thing is arbitrary word, but the last thing created was female. Female, the height of creation, represents the subconscious in us individually. So now we're going to an individual level. And you on an individual level, you have the conscious and the subconscious, male and female. That's what they represent. And it says in the Bible that man is the head of the woman as Christ is the head of the church. The conscious is the head of the subconscious. It guides it, it steers it, it programs it, it leads it. But then the subconscious is a much greater creative power, much greater power. The female has, it's the greatest height of desire in the world. There's nothing as beautiful as a woman in this world, in the universe. Nothing. It is the greatest desire. The desire, procreative desire, drives creation and the continuation of our species, of mankind. And also that union, conscious, subconscious, that desire to come to a singularity between the two, a unification of the two, of the divine. And when you do that, then the consciousness sparks and everything around you is created and powerfully. Luciferians, by symbolism, by trick, by hook, by crook, by music, by what have you, have gone to try to capture that imagination, capture that process, this conscious and the subconscious, and to create something and to create the world in their image. They think the greater the suffering, the greater the peace. There must be suffering. We must destroy all this, all that God has laid out, all that our consciousness has laid out as directed by divinity, that God has given us dominion over. All of it must be destroyed so something new comes up. And so that your loyalty, your divinity, your talent, your everything must then be given to this new Luciferian system. If you study the entertainment industry, it's obvious. You don't make it unless you pay homage, almost without question. I don't want to get too into that. That's for another time. But almost without question, on certain levels, certainly big levels, there is some homage paid. There is some dedicatory act done. I've talked to two people who told me when they went to sign record contracts that they say, okay, we're going to have a party for your record contract. Just go in this little room right here and do a few things. Yeah. So that's meant to be stolen. And the world that Luciferians are creating. I'll finish this thought on the other side. And Clive and Bundy's coming in. Why is this event so important? Why is Clive and Bundy so important? Hopefully I'll be able to wrap it up in time. And you'll be able to see. So good to be with you, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to the one and only Power Hour, thepowerhour.com. There is a very brutal, game is the wrong word, war going on in before us, in our consciousness. Really, that's where it is. That's where everything exists in our consciousness. That's where the battle is. Lucifer does not have the divinity that is within us. We are ignorant of it most of the time, almost all the time, completely. We don't quite see it. We see little spurts of it, or little senses of it, or little moments of it, or, you know, with the birth of a child, we feel that sense of it. You know, if you've seen your, had the privilege to see your child born, you see that magnificence, power, you can't even describe it, right? That's within us. Lucifer does not have that. What he's trying to take is the divinity that has been given to us, the fire that has been given to us. It's like Greek mythology, the same story about Ares. He wants to prove that God made a mistake. He wants to create war. And this will that God has given to us, the dominion that God has given to us, he wants to turn this on its head so that and destroy us with it so that he can prove that we should have never been given it and that that authority, that power should have been given to him all along. Where does America come in? There is no country in the world. And last night, Donald Trump gave a speech. And now, last night was the good Donald Trump. And we've talked about the bad Donald Trump. I'm concerned about certain things, Donald Trump. But Donald Trump has done some things that I never thought a president would do. He's a manifestation on a certain level. Last night, he talked about our God-given rights. That's what he said, our God-given rights. Can you imagine Obama saying that, Bush saying that, Clinton saying any of those things? Our God-given rights. He's talked about a republic before. I mean, my God, this is language we haven't heard in 100 plus years from a president like this. And he said it. The only country in the world of any consequence, of any size, of any influence that recognizes the divinity of man and that the rights and that the privilege, any privilege that man has is outside of government, that has been given to us by divinity, by God, the Creator. It's self-evident. The Declaration of Independence has declared it. The attack that we've seen, all these attacks on gender, the attacks on our founding fathers, the attacks on our culture, the attack on our educational system that is turning our children into socialists. Socialists are evil. Socialist thinking is evil. That's why I shouldn't say socialists are evil. They can be. You know, Hitler was a socialist, Stalin. Socialist thinking is evil. They're saying that you know better than me and you have the right to control my life at some level, where God gave me the freedom. So you are bucking, you are defying a decree of God, of nature, of consciousness, self-evident decree. So that's why it's evil. And it will always lead to destruction because God's dominion and freedom bursts into a thousand different ways and never ends and always expands. Love always expands. And God loved us, his creation, so much that he became us. That's what the Bible tells us. The scientific evidence that we are seeing is saying that the consciousness, the divinity, the creation of the universe is within each one of us. It loved us so much that it became us. It's saying the exact same thing. And so the United States of America is extremely important, massively important. And if the Constitution is ever to fall, then there'll be chaos throughout the world. My uncle, I was talking to him, and he was telling me about Alex Jones, what I've been saying for over a year. He says, we have to have some kind of unified message. I've been challenging people out there, like Alex Jones, like whoever. I am so glad, and I hope Alex hears this. I've tried to get in contact with Alex, but, you know, he's busy. I understand. The only solution, it doesn't matter if Trump gets this and we prosper and whatever. We have the schools which are teaching socialism. We have the schools which are ripping out the divinity within each one of us, and we're letting it happen. The only thing that will continue America and save this country and flourish America is the principles of our founding fathers, the principles that this country was founded on. And Alex asked the question, is it Christianity? Is it the Bill of Rights? Let me make this clear. I know this as sure as I'm standing here. There is only one unifying principle in America that will work, and it's the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence. It's not to say Christianity isn't more powerful or powerful. Christians will have the appeal to those things once they understand what this means and the Declaration of Independence means. Other people who maybe resent the Christian church will appeal to the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights. You see, everybody who wants freedom, who wants joy, who wants prosperity, who wants growth, who wants expansion, anybody who wants those things will be completely turned on by the Bill of Rights and Declaration of Independence if they're really taught the way that I've tried to teach you, ladies and gentlemen, the way that I've tried to present over and over and over to you. This is the answer. It is the solution. It is our greatest inheritance. It's so good to be with you. Welcome back to the Power Hour. It's such a pleasure to be with you. And my next guest, I'm going to have a little bit of a lengthy introduction here because he deserves it. I could hardly respect anybody who's been on the show more than this man who's on, Cliven Bundy. His son was on about 3 weeks ago. We'll talk about his governorship. We'll get into a lot of issues. This man loves his country. He loves the Constitution. I met him for the first time about a little over 4 years ago, not quite four and a half, in April of 2014. I can't believe it's been 4 years now. I met him at his place, the Bundy Ranch, by the Bundy Melon sign, and something miraculous happened. I want to hark back to 1775 in June. The shot heard around the world occurred in April, of course, in Lexington and Concord. There were battles that were going on. The Battle of Bunker Hill was the militia, the colonists, went and surrounded Boston Harbor because they saw that England was going to use that as a launching point, not only for men, but for a lot of ammunition, supplies, what have you. They surrounded it, England realized it, and immediately commenced an attack. At Bunker Hill in Massachusetts, America was eventually defeated, but it was England that took all the beating. England took all the casualties. England changed their entire attitude towards the colonists. Before that time, before the shot heard around the world, reports by officers were going to England, going to London, saying that Americans were cowards and that they would never fight the crown. It changed the way they did warfare, even though Britain won Bunker Hill. In the next year, George Washington, when he was pinned outside of Brooklyn on the East River, it's probably because they changed their tactics, it probably saved the entire Continental Army because Britain was hesitant to go in and finish off the whole army. If you know that story about the wind that came up and the fog out of nowhere. Why am I giving you all this history? Bunker Hill was a turning point in America, even though we lost. Bunkerville, Nevada. It's a small community between Mesquite, Nevada, and Las Vegas. I mean, you turn off the road, and it's a lot of red dirt and a lot of jackrabbits and not much else. You keep going, you come to the Virgin River, and out of nowhere, you see green. It's the only green around. And at this area is the standoff, the jurisdiction, the weight of American, the American Constitution, American individuality, God-given rights, God-given dominion, versus the power of the state. And one family, and one man was at the heart of it, and that's Cliven Bundy, and he's here today. And Cliven, my God, welcome to the Power Hour. Thank you so much for being on today, my friend.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to come before America today, and I it's always a pleasure to talk to people, and people of my community, my state, my country, and it's always exciting to talk to the world. So it's my pleasure. It's my privilege.
Well, very good. Let's give, for assume people don't know or they forgot. It's been 4+ years. Why don't you give just a slight background to what happened and why the dust up between you and the BLM and your cows that you had over there?
Well, let me give you a little background to who I am and what I do. I live about 80 miles east of Las Vegas, Nevada, and in southern Nevada. I live along the Virgin River and sort of on the east side of Lake Mead. And so that gives you a little description of where I'm at. What I do here is I graze cattle on this western desert land and harvest the forage, which is mostly browse, some grass, and I turn that grass and forage into edible commodity, which is red meat. It's good to eat. It's what we have for dinner. And so that's what I do. Now, to go back, you got to go back about 30 years. Environmentalists get involved in land issues. They're calling it multiple use, and we're talking about Bundy Ranch. They're saying that the desert tortoise and the cow, there's a conflict. The tortoise and the cow does eat the same type of feed and live on the same type of area, but there's no conflict. There's no scientific conflict. But yet they were, I guess I could call them tortoise lovers, people that were, had a one-track mind type thing. They chose a species that, and then they started to call it endangered species, and then they started to basically try to reserve a habitat for the species. And so in that process, they got eliminated like 52 of my neighbor ranchers. But I realized that I had a rights, I had constitutional rights, I had property rights, that were good rights. And instead of just giving up and laying down and letting them crowd me out like they did my neighbors, I said no. And then finally I said hell no, and basically fired the BLM from managing my ranch. And then I operated for about 20 years on my ranch with the BLM basically torment me.
Let me interject real quickly. When I talked to you about 4 years ago, you were telling me this whole story. I mean, this is a lengthy story, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, you hear in the news, well, Bundy doesn't want to pay this, and it's not fair, and all this, whatever. Your family, or that land, it goes back, it predates Nevada becoming a state. The only place to graze cattle is along that Virgin River, so everybody shared that land, that area equally. The BLM came along at some point in the early 20th century. They said, well, we'll manage it for you. Correct me if I'm wrong, your case where it went to federal court said now the BLM now didn't just manage this land, now they own the land, and that was the first time in history that had ever been said. Is that correct? Correct me if I'm wrong there.
You know, if you go back to a little history on this land. You know, once it belonged to the Native Indian, and then it belonged to the nation of Spain, then it belonged to the nation of Mexico, and then in the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, it became a territory of the United States. Now, we're talking about Bundy Ranch now, and also, you know, southern Nevada, Clark County area. So Bundy Ranch is now a territory. Well, in Article 4 of the Constitution, you'll find out that the Congress has basically unlimited power over territories. But one of the powers they had was to dispose of the territory and make all needful rules and regulations. Well, they did dispose of this territory. And the Bundy Ranch territory actually was not part of the Nevada territory. It was part of Arizona territory. And so it was disposed of in 1866 and made a part of Nevada. So Bundy Ranch used to be a part of the territory of Arizona. Now it has been disposed of by the United States government and made a part of the state of Nevada. The state of Nevada has been admitted into statehood in 1864, and the state of Nevada has its constitution, and it's a joined union. And so this land belongs to the state of Nevada, not the United States, and not some foreign government. My family came to this area in 1877, January 7, 1877 is when my family come here. But part of my grazing rights and water rights preempt back into the 1850s. And so we've been ranching here a long time.
Yes, I'll say. When I went there, one of the things that shocked me the most, and you mentioned the Constitution, you mentioned the law, you mentioned jurisdiction, and we'll have time for all that. We got about a minute or so before the break here, so we'll get on this on the other side. But one of the things that shocked me was 87% of Nevada is still owned by the federal government. Why don't you briefly just address that?
Well, that sounds good. 80%, almost 90% they claim. But I'm saying no, they don't own it. They disposed of it in 1866. Congress has no jurisdiction, no congressional power left. They disposed of it. What does dispose mean? They got rid of it, and they got rid of it and basically attached it to the state of Nevada. The state of Nevada is a sovereign state. It's not part of the United States in the sense that they govern the land. So I graze my cattle only on Clark County, Nevada land.
You see, ladies and gentlemen, this is such a big, big issue. And what Cliven is saying, look, 52 ranchers before him, the government basically by the policies, BLM by the policies, are basically run out of business. So Cliven had two choices. He's either going to stand for what he believes in, or he was going to get run out of business also. And he stood. And thank God he did. The created can never be greater than the creator. That's a kind of a maxim of law and just logic, really. What created the federal government? What created the Constitution? The states did. The states. It's not states' rights. It's states' powers, because they were sovereign. They were individual sovereign governments, entities under their own, creating a big federal overarching government for their mutual protection and those kind of things. That's what we're talking about. Article 1 of the Constitution about land. The federal government can own land like for ports, for post offices, and things like that. Not what we're talking about here. Cliven's describing This is a huge, huge constitutional issue. But, Cliven, go ahead and address that about states' land ownership and how it goes back and forth between federal control.
Okay, let's talk about my family a little bit again. You know, I said they come here in 1877. From 1877 till 1934, the federal government didn't exist on this land. They didn't have nothing to do with it. They didn't claim their own ownership. They didn't claim management. And the ranchers were basically running by Nevada law. You know, in other words, Nevada water law mainly was the rule. And so how did the federal government end up claiming they own 90% of the state of Nevada? Well, to do this fast, it's a little bit tough. But let me tell you, that in the 1934 time, there was lots of ranchers and lots of cattle people, a lot of sheep people, and they all had preemptive rights created, but there's no boundaries, no borders, no lines, no fences. And so they run sort of in common, and they were having what they call range wars, and they was overgrazing on the land. And so because it was an interstate problem, not just a Nevada problem, but basically a Western United States problem, Congress did have some authority. I guess you got to give them a little bit of authority there that they could come in and sort of take care of an interstate problem. And what they did is they come in and they contracted with the cowboys, or the ranchers. And what they contracted to do was to adjudicate the property rights. And that's where the federal government gets their finger in the pot. And so from 1934 until today, they have basically increased that power to the point that they used to be a service, a paid far by the rancher, until now they got to the point they claim they own the land, and so that's how it's evolved. There's nothing in our Constitution that allows them to be here or to have any management power, and yet our states and counties have allowed it until the point that they claim ownership.
This is a big point for your son. He's running for governor. We probably should mention now, Ryan Bundy for governor, RyanBundyGovernor.com. That's a main point that he's running on. Your family, obviously, this is very important. For you, the others, when you saw the other ranchers around and you saw them start to lose hope or basically be run out of business, what was going through your mind?
Well, you know, I'd struggled with it for most of my life. And, in other words, what BLM was doing now, instead of managing, or instead of being a service, remember I said their service was to adjudicate this land or help adjudicate it. The government
yes.
never did adjudicate it. It was all done through a grazing board, which were livestock industry people themselves did all of the judgments. But the government was supposed to oversee it. It was supposed to survey it, and it was supposed to keep records on it. And now that we've evolved to where they're claiming they own have management, and what they were doing is basically controlling the number of cattle, the season of cattle run on the range. They started to get this environmental thing involved where they got endangered species, endangered creatures, and endangered plants. In other words, the bureaucracy was just running and they're wild, and their employment, you know, instead of running, having three or four people that manage the great big area, now they got 300 or 400 people, and they, of course, they need things to do. So the bureaucracy just grew to the point that they have claimed they own land, owned it, and they basically have convinced the people that they own it. They've convinced America that this is their land, and it has nothing to do with America's land. This is sovereign land. This belongs to the state of Nevada and the people of the subdivisions of Clark County. And so when I get to the point of saying no and hell no, well, what I do is I basically fire the BLM, and I tell them I do not need their service no longer. And so Bundy Ranch has run without their service, And that's where you get the grazing fees and those things involved. Well, I used to pay grazing fees, and I signed grazing contracts, which was called BLM licenses and contracts. But once I fired the BLM, I have no contract with the federal government no more. I don't need their service, and I'm not going to pay for their service. And so they claim that I owe grazing fees. Well, I don't owe grazing fees. I never have owed grazing fees. When I had a contract with the federal government, I paid my grazing fees. When I have no contract with the federal government, I have never paid grazing fees for over 20 years. I don't owe grazing fees. I don't graze on their land. I don't eat their grass. I don't drink their water. I graze on Clark County, Nevada land, and I own the grass and the water, according to Nevada law.
That's right, the people. It's like the roadways when people say about the highways, well, the government owns that. No, they don't. The people own. We own the highway. This is our land, and you are exercising that. Have you ever heard of we got a couple of minutes before break here. Have you ever heard of UN Agenda 21 or UN Agenda 2030? Have you ever heard of those terms?
Well, yes, I have, and you know, I've heard of those for quite a few years. I thought, you know, well, that's a conspiracy or that, you know, or whatever. But you know what is interesting? When I read, and I'm talking about going back 20 years ago or over, when I start reading these environmental papers about the desert tourism, about the BLM management, and then I read about the Agenda 21, I find out the same language is in there. And then when I look into some of the legislation of the United States, I see the same language. So, yeah, Agenda 21 is true, and that definitely has been moving forward on the Western United States.
There's so for people who've never been to the West, maybe you live on the East Coast or even in Missouri. You know, I think 1% of the land is federally owned in Missouri, and most of the East Coast. When you get to the West, there's so much, you cannot believe the amount of open space that is there. And for these people who think that we're overpopulated and too many people, I mean, it's a joke. I mean, there's nothing but land. There's nothing but land west of Mississippi.
Yeah, there's lots of land. You know, if you fly over this land, you just can't imagine how much land's here. You know, if you drive through it, and you know, most people from the East and even the South and the East, they look at this land and it seems like a desert. There's no value to it. But it is. It's very high in nutrition for us feed and livestock feed. You know, there's lots of minerals in these lands, and of course, the oil and coal. There's a lot of resource in the West. In fact, the West is real, real rich in resources.